You're listening to the Humans of DevOps podcast, a podcast focused on advancing the humans of DevOps through skills, knowledge, ideas, and learning, or the SKIL framework. Here's your host, DevOps Institute CEO, Jane Grohl.
Hi, everyone. This is Jane Grohl, CEO of the DevOps Institute, and welcome to another episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. I'm really delighted to be joined by Baruch Satagorsky, Director of DevOps Advocacy, I hope I got that right, Baruch, with JFrog, good friend, a good advocate, and now a DevOps Institute ambassador. Welcome, Baruch.
Thank you, Jane. Yes, super excited to be the DevOps Institute ambassador. That's a great honor. Thank you for accepting me to the program, and super excited to be on this podcast. Thank you for having me.
I'm excited to have you too. And, you know, as Baruch, as you know, we're in the middle of a terrible global crisis. And this pandemic, you know, this is the Humans of DevOps podcast. This is a human crisis. And I think it's taught us some lessons that despite the fact that nobody predicted this, nobody wanted it. But I think for enterprises and for individuals, we're learning some pretty hard lessons from this pandemic. And I want to talk to you a little bit about kind of the people, process, and technology lessons that we're learning when, you know, most organizations around the world have had to pivot very quickly. But before we begin, I know that you and your colleagues at JFrog wrote a really great book about liquid software. Can you tell us a little bit about what liquid software is?
Yeah, for sure. So liquid software, you can learn more at liquidsoftware.com, obviously. It's a concept that talks about kind of a next step of continuous things. You have continuous integration, you have continuous delivery, you have continuous deployment. And the next step for us, at least how we see it in JFrog, is the continuous updates. Continuous updates are the realization that what we do in all those continuous things is actually more often than not updating existing software instead of installing a new one, which basically means two main things. The first is your updates are small and frequent, as opposed to when you install a new application, it will be like a big and rare event. And your updates are updating something existing instead of setting up something new. And when you start thinking in continuous update metaphor, you actually realize that the more frequently and the smaller you have your updates, the better it is for both the producer, the vendor, and the consumer, the user, the customer. And if we take this idea of small and frequent updates to an extreme, it actually becomes kind of a flow of very frequent and very small updates up to a point when software looks like liquid that streams from the vendor to the user. And this is where the liquid software metaphor comes from.
I love that because, you know, I was an IT director in a galaxy long time ago, far, far away, right? And, you know, the concept of Patch Tuesday, right, where every Tuesday you took all the patches you got from all your vendors, right? I'm sure you lived that life at some point as well. And the risk factor, right, the risk factor was tremendous. I mean, on the upside, there was always the concern that which one was going to cause an outage. And if an outage occurred, how did you know which one it actually was, right? So, and in today's very fluid environment, I love the analogy of it being liquid because, again, the idea of being continuous, liquid flows, right, until it runs into some type of a barrier. And it sounds like removing those barriers, going small and more frequent, which is really, you know, the kind of the core of DevOps, is something that's you know, particularly important.
Absolutely, yes.
So, and I started by saying that this terrible situation has also taught many, many organizations lessons, some hard lessons, right? Some really hard lessons in terms of dependency on technology, right? Yes. Organizations found out, some very well, some very poorly. By the way, if you're a COBOL programmer, you have some enormous opportunities ahead of you. But it also showed that it's no longer an option, I think, to be able to look at decoupling, right? To look at moving to the cloud, to look at how you build your applications and what artifacts and assets that you use to do that. And I think more important than anything else, it showed that humans are probably the critical success factor that will make or break your ability to adapt to changing business environments. And in this case, many organizations had to pivot very, very quickly, often in a matter of a few days, from an on-prem in-office environment to an off-prem work-at-home environment. So I wanted to just chat with you a little bit about that. I mean, obviously, you know, the work that you do, you've been an amazing advocate for the community. You know, JFrog, I think, plays a really important place in not only the DevOps community, but in the enterprise community. Liquid software, how can organizations embrace the concept of liquid software and, you know, look at what they were doing before, how they're adapting today, and potentially, what do they need to do differently in the future? So I know that's a really big question, but maybe you can break it down for us.
Yeah. I think I can tie into a couple of things that you said and bring it back to DevOps and liquid software. And I wanted to start with the COBOL example because it's so amazing and so profound. So the most interesting story about this COBOL thing is that it proves how much liquid software can save you from suffering and unnecessary expense in a completely unpredictable scenarios. So what we are talking about, why suddenly the COBOL developers are in such a high demand, it turns out that a lot of unemployment systems that manage unemployment payments were written in COBOL and never bothered to be updated for one of the reasons no one thought it's necessary. For many, many years, the unemployment was low. The systems were adequate for the load that was at the time. But then, because of the pandemic, obviously, the unemployment skyrocketed and those systems didn't manage to take the load of all the people that applied to unemployment benefits. And this is where now government is looking for COBOL developments in a very panic mode and ready to pay any money, actually, for someone who can actually fix those systems. And the problem here is, amazingly, as the problem in a lot of other aspects, is a lack of updates. Those systems were never updated because people thought, why bother? And here's an example for you. If you don't update your systems for 20 years, when something happens,
right,
you will be in a very bad situation. So if this system were updated continuously, I'm not even saying liquid software, but that would be ideal, but even more frequently than once in 20 years, they would probably use more adequate technologies today, and there would probably be a more robust and more elastic and would able to stand this peak and obviously reply and be able to handle the situation without now trying to hire developers which are in very low supply for any money and suffering obviously huge losses in terms of both uptime and service and in the end of the day money that they need to pay to those rare unicorns that can fix the system that wasn't updated in 20 years. So basically, here you go. Something that you say, well, I don't need updates. No one wants to hack to it, so there is no security needs. We don't need new features because it didn't change, so why would I bother? And suddenly you see how even here, updates are critical in order to prevent this kind of event.
And at the end of the day, while they think that they're saving money, right, by, you know, keeping a system stable, right, you know, no cost, no risk. At the end of the day, high cost, high risk.
Exactly.
Right, and it doesn't take a pandemic for that high cost, high risk to suddenly, you know, become necessary, right?
Absolutely. They might have any other kind of failure that won't be able to fix because no one touched this system in 20 years. Absolutely, for sure.
Yeah. It's scary that way. And so that's where they are today. And it's interesting that it isn't just one state, right? It's multiple states that are struggling with this. Man, I wish I had learned COBOL, right?
Well, I wish they would do liquid software.
Yeah, well, and exactly. And that, and so that's kind of a, you know, we know what the past looks like. We know what the present looks like, at least for those operations. And I'm sure there are similar stories outside of the COBOL dilemma, right, where organizations didn't take advantage of some of the innovations. And we're not even talking about being a unicorn, right? We're talking about, you know, some of the opportunities, you know, the advocacy for breaking down into microservices, containers, things like that. That's not really new. I mean, what, 5 years that haven't been taken advantage of? So what do you think the future looks like?
Yeah. So before we go into the future, another example of today's situation that also kind of magically ties to, or not surprisingly ties to liquid software, is the disruption that the pandemic applied to entire industry. And suddenly the things that we thought are less important become the most important things. Obviously, all the remote work collaboration software like Zoom, and again, their ability or inability to react to the market, to sudden market awareness of them, and obviously all the criticism that followed them when people started to pay attention and saw the problems. And here again, how fast a company can respond is basically in the heart of how frequently and how well they can update their software. I feel for them because you can take any company now, the best unicorn in the world, and if suddenly the entire world, all they are doing is they're going through your dirty laundry, they will find stuff.
Right.
Because no one is perfect. And this is why I feel for them, because it's not that this Zoom is horrible in terms of security, is privacy. No, they are average. It's just suddenly they are the talk of the day. Everybody are looking at them and finding stuff that they overlooked in Zoom and in other tools that they just didn't pay attention to. So the question is not how Zoom could prevent it. Probably they couldn't, because it's written by humans, mistakes are made, software is hard, and everybody have problems. The question is, okay, now you are in the spotlight. How fast can you ship those updates that will fix the problems and you will prevail as a hero instead being the joke and getting laugh out on the industry? And again, we found ourselves with liquid software in our hands that obviously should fix this problem as well, because the faster Zoom can ship their updates, the better shape they will be, and the response time to those comments, to those accusations, is the critical piece of Zoom survival.
Well, you know, what's interesting about that is you're speaking about it, and you know, unfortunately, right, we even coined a new part of our vocabulary, right? Zoom bombing. And yes, it's like, really, like within a week, we come up with new terms, and that's a little
exactly
bit scary. But what also I think is not recognized, that when we look at continuous updates, right, updates historically have a lot of toil associated with them, right, where there it's a laborious effort where, you know, we have to build, we have to compile, we have to test, we have to, and then, you know, so in the old days we do releases, what, once a month, once a quarter, once a year?
Yep.
Right. And so now, you know, the small and frequent, and I think that's really, the, you know, if we have to look at the underlying message, small, right? First of all, small.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
So frequent, good, but small, right?
Yes.
Because
yes,
small is manageable. And so,
exactly,
you know, little drops of updates as opposed to the, you know, the big bang, higher cost, higher risk. And so hopefully coming away from this, the ability to adapt to that, if you're small, you can be frequent. But if you're not, you can't be. And I think that, you know, also the human side of it, that when we look at what the human toll is, now in a pandemic, obviously we've learned a lot about the need for humans, which sounds ridiculous, but it's true that in an automated world, we need humans. So, you know, looking at kind of the liquid software approach, what element of that is human, and how does that support human transformation, making humans more productive, right? Or in this case, right, allowing humans to focus on things that truthfully today at least only humans can do, which is really the critical thinking element. So how does liquid software support kind of the human aspect of software delivery?
Yeah, so the entire relationship between humans and machines and robots in the day of accelerated software delivery is fascinating, because what we actually say is that in the end of the day, when we do those continuous updates, when we build those pipelines, we want to automate people out of the process, because people are all slow, make mistakes, obviously cannot keep up with the velocity that we expect from continuous updates and liquid software. But obviously people are not replaceable at the moment. What we advocate for is shifting the responsibility of humans from validating the software to validating the pipeline. Because validating the software means we have a hard stop, we have a manual validation step, mm-hmm. in which people will look at the software from different angles. It might be QA, it might be security, it might be performance or whatever, and then kind of approve it to go to the next step in our pipeline. And instead, we need to move people to build and validate the pipelines, so those pipelines can then apply the attestations that human intended to the software without slowing down the flow of continuous updates and the liquid software.
And you know, what's interesting about that is that humans have the end-to-end, right? We can see, right? We can see the end-to-end process, hopefully, right?
Absolutely.
You know, I think one of the reasons that agile software development struggled to really kind of gain the foothold that it was intending to gain was that, yeah, you know, the software development teams were starting to iterate, right? They were starting to go smaller and more frequently. They were starting to iterate, but the downstream activities were still pretty slow because they were very manual. And I think that as we start to look at, particularly for developers, right, having that kind of court vision of the pipeline instead of, you know, just this kind of siloed blinder approach is something that we've seen a lot of growth in, I think, but I still think we have a long way to go. And again, I go back to where we are today. I think that there have been some really hard lessons learned about, you know, even simple things, right? Even simple things. I mentioned before we started recording that my husband is working from home, and he works for a fairly traditional organization, and they've got a long legacy, and they're very successful and all of that, but they had never used WebEx before,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
And so now suddenly you've got, you know, a 200-person leadership team that has to learn how to communicate without walking to somebody's office or going into a conference room or, you know, getting on the telephone or anything like that. Now, very simple example, but suddenly take that organization and multiply it by, I don't even know what the factor is, and suddenly these software packages are not elastic enough to be able to handle it. They're busy struggling to put in some kind of an update. Their team is now working from home, right? So they're remote. And so what was originally a very disruptive event, which it still is, layers of disruption kept being added and added and added. Now, the good news is I've spoken to several CIOs recently who have said it was horrible, but we're okay now. Right. So they've learned to adapt. They've learned to work around. But they've also said, yeah, we're okay right now, but we know what we need to do. Right. We know not what, maybe not what we need to do, but this is no longer optional for us.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Right? It's a mandate. It's a global mandate. It's not even limited to one industry. It's a global mandate. What's Absolutely. Your experience with that?
Yeah. No, I mean, that's exactly that. People have to adjust. And I think this is what we have our, one of the last advantages to the machines that do a lot of stuff better than us, more accurate than us, faster than us. But obviously the adjustment is where humans excel. This is why we survived all that long. Well, until 2020, at least, we'll see what happens next. But absolutely, this is where humans should apply their next evolution after what they figured out after the next big disruption, like now, to those pipelines and to those machines. Absolutely.
I do think there's another message that comes through. And you and I have talked about this before. And you know, the one message I think that's being carried just across the globe is take this time to grow a skill. Because coming out of this, you know, and you know this, DevOps Institute does an annual upskilling report. And so looking at which skills are considered must-have, nice-to-have, and not as important has become clearer year over year. We just finished our second year. But this is a good opportunity, you know, so that we prepare the necessary skills that when we're out of the pandemic, and I don't think we're reverting back, right? You know, everybody's talking about what does the new normal look like. I don't know.
Exactly. Yes, yes.
But we know the new normal is going to require new skills. And so if you're listening, I think that there's a clear message to individuals and hopefully their organizations support that, that this is as good a time as any to start identifying which skills, right? Which skills do you think that you need. So in the arena of liquid software, if somebody were going to focus, so say I'm a developer, right? So you're in charge of developer advocacy. What skills would you suggest that they start to groom?
Yeah, so first of all, absolutely. You're very, very right. We will have a new normal. All the digital transformation that we now experience, which is forced on us because of the consequences, is not going away. And some topics that dear to both of us, for example, the tech conferences, IT conferences, they will be disrupted forever. Even after we have the herd immunity and we think we can safely go back to our beloved gatherings, the online conferences are not going away. We actually gained a new format because of what's happening now that will stick with us after everything is done. And if you now learn how to run this kind of conference, how to speak at this conference, how to attend the conference without, you know, being distracted by your fridge or your TV and actually be able to participate in it, those skills you will carry out when everything will be get back to our new normal, whatever it will be. And today, especially, it's an amazing opportunity to learn new skills, both because some of us are forced to, because of the new reality, we cannot just do the things the old way, and others are now have the free time on their hands to actually put it in a good use. So that will be an amazing opportunity to actually up your skills. And I think that the skills that DevOps forces us to learn are not only less, but even more relevant today, and especially when it comes to collaboration. And that's because the collaboration now, it's harder because it's remote. And that's in the heart of DevOps, right? DevOps is about collaboration. So how can we collaborate more effectively when actually the reality kind of makes this collaboration harder? I think this is one of the most important questions of today.
I agree. And actually, in the upskilling report, one of the categories of skills is what used to be called soft skills. We've now reframed as human skills, and collaboration and communication, absolutely number one, right? Absolutely agreed across all layers of the organization that being a better collaborator, and by the way, that's not necessarily natural, right? It's not like you're either born a good collaborator or you're not, right? There are some, you know, very proven skills and exercises and ways to just practice being a better collaborator that's more intentional. And then communication skills, right? If you know, there's a saying, if you think you communicated, double your efforts. Because again, what you say and what people hear are different, but they are different from each other, right? Communication is in some ways more passive. I tell you, you tell me. Collaboration means I respect your expertise and I ask for your opinion, right? Empathy really rose up as a key skill, right? Putting yourself in the position of somebody else. And I think that's important as well. And I appreciate that, Brooke, because I think too often if I were to ask that question, you know, they would say, well, learn Kubernetes.
I mean, there is something into it, right? Kubernetes is very complex and it requires a lot of time to learn. And today, if you are the one that have the time on their hands because of the staying home order, maybe learning Kubernetes is a good idea. It's time consuming, but obviously that's not the bottleneck of implementing DevOps.
No, it's not. And speaking of Kubernetes, so, you know, we've been declaring a topic of the month. And so April is Value Stream Management Month, but May is Enterprise Kubernetes Month. And I think you're going to be joining us at SkillUp Days to talk a little bit about Kubernetes as well. So I'm excited about that as well.
Well, yeah. And by all means, if you have time, the Kubernetes certifications, various Kubernetes certifications, are a great way to spend this time with something very, very useful that looks like is not going away. And that's a very good skill to learn. But I mean, the problem is not there. The problem is not your Kubernetes. The problem is people that collaborate or don't collaborate with each other good enough. And today, collaboration is more critical than ever because of the situations we are in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's our hope that we can provide more examples of what good collaboration looks like. We can provide more capabilities in terms of what good collaboration looks like. But I also think going back and kind of wrapping up on our topic of liquid software, you know, I really do love the analogy of liquid, right? Because liquid flows. And at some point, maybe it's liquid collaboration, right? That you know, as the software is flowing, so go the humans. And that the barriers that would stop that ability to be continuous, right? So a continuous collaboration approach is really necessary. Maybe liquid humans are needed for liquid software, right?
But yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, liquid software is as much about collaboration as any other DevOps movement, if you wish. And obviously, as I mentioned, to empower those pipelines to build the trust that we try to build between the software vendors and the software consumers, people have to talk to each other and have to collaborate, because unless we can trust the pipelines, we cannot trust the software. And if we cannot trust the software, we won't take those updates. And if we won't take those updates, there is no liquid software. There are no frequent updates. And, you know, Zoom will get bashed until they roll something out in 2 months from now and it will be too late for them. And the unemployment system won't be updated in another 20 years, which will actually cost people their income, their money, eventually their lives.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you. And again, if we've learned any lesson from this, it's that lead, follow, or get out of the way, right? I mean, that's really what it comes down to, that accepting status quo, particularly in societies, global societies, that are accelerating faster than ever before, where human skill is, the shelf life of human skill is shorter than it's ever been before. And again, do you learn COBOL or do you learn Kubernetes? Well, COBOL is going to have a certain, you know, lifespan now. Kubernetes or whatever comes after Kubernetes, right, is going to be longer. So the message, I think, is continuous, right? Continuous updates, Liquid software, continually updating humans, right? We update our software, we need to update our humans. And I'll coin the term liquid human. We call them hybrid humans at DevOps Institute, but I think maintaining a kind of liquid mentality is important. And I think that when we come out of this, and we will, maybe it'll be in short spurts, maybe it will be permanent, but when we will, that we don't go back to the way things were, right? That we do look for a new normal, and there's probably a few new normals ahead of us, but that the work that you're advocating, the work of JFrog, the work of the DevOps community, hopefully the work of the DevOps Institute, provide the service that the world needs in order to realize the benefits of the new normal. So thank you for that.
I'm personally very optimistic about the new normal. As I mentioned, some of the things that we have to come up with as a replacement for those other things will keep being around after the old things that we miss now will come back. And this is great. We actually create more than we used to have. And this is what it's always been about.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm going to invite you back in a few months, and then we're going to see where we are, right, in the evolution. And I don't know when that is, right? I really don't know when that is. I don't know, you know, they're saying we'll be open in May, we'll be open. I don't know when that is, right? I don't know when we start to really move forward to a new normal. But I would invite you back because I said I'm hoping that these very hard lessons that have been particularly hard on humans and on certain segments in the business world globally are lessons that we can use so that heaven forbid this ever happens again, or something that is as disruptive, maybe hopefully not another pandemic, but something that we can persevere through all of that. So Baruch, yes, Thank you so much. As I said, May is Enterprise Kubernetes Month. So our virtual skill up day is going to be focused entirely on enterprise Kubernetes. And I appreciate very much the fact that JFrog is going to be a sponsor of that. So I invite anyone listening to come up and register. It's free. It is a conference experience. So we have a lot of interactive aspects of the event that the humans at DevOps can take advantage of. And certainly visiting with our friends at JFrog will be one of them.
For sure. We are very excited and looking forward. And obviously, it will be great. So by all means, please go ahead and register. And, you know, one of the benefits of the whole move to virtual events, most of them are free. So there is definitely no reason not to attend.
Absolutely. Thank you. So please send my personal regards to the team at JFrog. And thank you for spending some time with us today. So again, I'm Jane Grohl of the DevOps Institute. You've been listening to the Humans of DevOps podcast with, and I know I'm going to mess this up, so I'm so sorry, with Baruch Sagadorsky. Did I get it right?
It's close.
Oh, it's close. developer advocacy with JFrog. Wishing you well, stay safe, and looking forward to another episode. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. Don't forget to join our global community to get access to even more great resources like this. Until next time, remember, you are part of something bigger than yourself. You belong.